translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. It is like the homogeneous effulgence around the sun, but inside the sun are the chariots, horses, and other opulences of the sun. So it's talking about that region called Siddhaloka, which is beyond the material nature. Its essence is spiritual, but it does not have spiritual varieties. It is like the homogeneous effulgence around the sun, but inside the sun are the chariots, horses, and other opulences of the sun god. Purport. Outside of Vaikuntha, the abode of Krishna, which is called Paravyoma, is the glaring effulgence of Krishna's bodily rays. This is called the Brahmajyoti. The transcendental region of that effulgence is called Siddhaloka or Brahmaloka. When impersonalists achieve liberation, they merge into that Brahmaloka effulgence. This transcendental region is undoubtedly spiritual, but it contains no manifestations of spiritual activities or variegatedness. It is compared to the glow of the sun. Within the sun's glow is the sphere of the sun, where one can experience all sorts of varieties. Om Magyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I ask for the blessings of all the devotees present to be able to say something of some value. I found it particularly difficult actually preparing for this class, so I definitely need your mercy to speak something. But just to revise, this chapter is entitled The Glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. And as many of you have not been here for the last couple of weeks, we'll just look at the chapter as a whole. And basically the chapter is devoted to describing the essential nature and glories of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. And, of course, Lord Nityananda is the first expansion. And it says in the summary that in a form for pastimes, of course, that is Lord Sri Balaram. And then, actually, the summary goes into a long explanation, well, a fairly long explanation of creation. Because Lord Balaram is instrumental in that. So Lord Balaram is the what's he called? The personality of servitorship Godhead. Is that right? Yeah. And he's also considered to be the original spiritual master who is manifesting himself in this world so that we can, as the spiritual master in different forms, so that we can actually learn what he relishes so much, which is actually service. Service to Lord Krishna is what Lord Balaram relishes. And he comes in the form of Lord Nityananda to do the same thing, basically. But so the ways that he actually serves the Lord is described. Beyond the limitation of this material world is a spiritual sky, the Paravyoma. And within that, there are many spiritual planets. Of course, the greatest or the supreme, most perfect planet is Krishna Loka, which is the abode of Krishna. And then there are three divisions, which are Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokula. And then it's described how Lord Balaram is the one of the Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha. So he is Sankarshan. And there's a place in Krishna Loka called Swetadweep or Vrindavan. But below Krishna Loka in the spiritual sky, the Vaikuntha planets. So this is what is mentioned in the verses we're looking at today. On each Vaikuntha planet, a four-handed Narayan is expanded from the first quadruple manifestation. And the personality of Godhead known as Sri Balaram in Krishna Loka is the original Sankarshan, attracting deity. And from the Sankarshan expands another Sankarshan called Mahasankarshan, who resides in one of the Vaikuntha planets. So he's maintaining the whole transcendental world. He's expanding himself in all these different forms, but particularly he's expanding himself in the form of the Lord's umbrella, slippers, couch, pillows, garments, residence, sacred thread, throne, so many things he's expanding himself as. So, personally, I find the details quite difficult to grasp, or at least explain, one interesting point that actually comes out to me is that it says in the summary that actually there is a Vaikuntha planet in each universe. And on that Vaikuntha planet, also the Lord is residing. So, but in these verses that we're looking at, let me turn back to it and so those who attain Brahma Sayujya. So last week we were talking about the four forms of liberation. That are aspired to, and that's in verse 30. So the Lord delivers the fallen living entities by offering them the four kinds of liberation: Shalokya, Samipya, Shasti, and Swarupya. But those who attain Brahma Sayujya liberation cannot gain entrance into Vaikuntha. Their residence is outside the Vaikuntha planets. So Brahma Sayujya liberation is emerging into the form of the Lord. So it's described that outside the Vaikuntha planets is the atmosphere of the glowing effulgence which consists of the supremely bright rays of the body of Lord Krishna. And the interesting point is from this that I read from one lecture by Srila Prabhupada on the Sri Ishapanisad, verses 13 to 15 in Los Angeles in 1970. Prabhupada is referring to actually jnanis and demons both go to Brahman. So the Brahmajyoti, they both get the same destination. So obviously, as aspiring devotees, this is not the destination that we're aiming for. There's a nice verse actually by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur from the Chaitanya Chandramrita, which I don't know by heart. But you may be familiar with. Kaivalyam narakayate tridasha pur akasha pushpayate durdantendriya kala sapa patali protkata damstrayate vishvam purna sukayate vidhi mahendradish cha kitayate yat karunya kataksha vaibhavavatam tam goram eva stumaha. So this is the verse that explains that for a devotee, the pleasure of merging into the existence of Brahman is considered hellish. So in the killing of the Agasura demon, it's very clear in that episode that when Krishna killed that demon, a spark, the spirit soul, came out of the body of Agasura and actually merged into the Lord's, the body of the Lord. And also, of course, Shishupal, the same thing, when his head was decapitated by the Sudarshan Chakra, it was seen that the spirit soul coming from him actually merged into the body of... So this was very surprising. But when we think that for a devotee, the pleasure of merging into the existence of Brahman is considered hellish, so in one sense, it's not such a surprising thing. So also a devotee, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, he also considers promotion to heavenly planets just another kind of phantasmagoria. So the yogis meditate for sense control, but for the devotee, the senses appear like serpents with broken teeth. And there's a very nice phrase which you may be familiar with in this verse, which says, Vishvam purna shukayate, which means the whole material world appears joyful for a devotee. Vishvam purnam shukayate. But this, I think, is when you're on a very high level of realization. Just like it's explained that there's two kinds of people who are happy, the fool and the fully self-realized soul. So for those of us who are in between, then maybe veering on the foolish side, in my case anyway, but therefore we still may be feeling some pangs of suffering. But obviously we don't want to just become fools. We have to become intelligent by hearing about Krishna's pastimes. So Sayujya, Brahma Sayujya liberation is not something that devotees are aspiring for. Although I have met people coming to the temple, one particular individual I remember in Soho Street, very firmly convinced that he'd been in the Brahma Jyoti. And it was impossible to convince him otherwise. He'd apparently spent time in a desert somewhere, and at that point achieved this form of liberation, but somehow or other lost it again. Maybe it's true, I don't know. Maybe it was that. But the main point was, he was just hankering after that again. He said, I can't do it now in London. On the other hand, I can't go back to the desert where I achieved this form, this realization or existence within. And he described it like, you know, Brahma Jyoti, you know, brightness and light and blissfulness. But he couldn't go back to that situation, but he was still hankering after it also. So this is perhaps something, what it's like, that you're hankering after something, but actually it's unattainable on a permanent basis. So then the next verse says, that region is called Siddhaloka, and is beyond the material nature. Its essence is spiritual, but it does not have spiritual varieties. So the main thing is, actually there's variety both in the material world and in the spiritual world. So I was just thinking about what it is about variety, because they say that variety is the spice of life. If we have porridge every day for every meal, we soon get pretty sick of it. It's something that we have to have varieties, especially those who are brought up in the West. I mean, just even having khichri, that's the word. Yeah, khichri every day for every meal. Eventually, you just, I can't eat this anymore. So we have to have variety. That's essential to the soul, to the living being. But actually, in the material world, variety is equated with difference. Like, for instance, actually we're frightened often. Many people are frightened of differences or varieties, because we get used to a certain situation and we know how to operate in that situation. So then when something changes, we can become bewildered because we're not used to it. Our senses become, just like I remember when I grew up more or less in the country, and when I first went to London, I was completely sort of like bewildered by these huge buildings everywhere, so many people. You know, you're used to walking around in fields and, you know, just one house here, dotted here and there and everywhere. And then suddenly you come. So change is very difficult to handle, actually, in the material sense. And we don't know what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to act. So therefore, actually, we're always looking for security, for what we're familiar with, familiarity, because then we know how to conduct ourselves, how to, just like in country places, in villages and things, most people, or they used to, I don't know about now, but they would say hello to anybody that just walks down the street. And it's just natural. Nobody thinks, you know, this is a strange person. So when I first came to London, just as a young person, I was really bewildered. And, everybody's just rushing about, ignoring everybody else. And what I started doing is I bought a packet of sweets, and I started offering people these sweets, which is, you know, probably a really weird thing to do. maybe that was my first attempt at some kind of sankirtan. But anyway, I soon realized that that's not the way you behave in big cities. It's not the done thing at all. So basically, we're If we're in a material consciousness, we have to have what we're familiar with in order to be able to operate properly. Otherwise, we become very bewildered. And this actually sometimes comes out in very extreme ways, in that, like a village person, like in before mass communications, when people, you know, TV, radio and things, people didn't know actually what was going on outside of their own village or small town. So then anything beyond the perimeter of their village or town is foreign and strange and unusual and threatening and frightening, actually, like that. Now, the basic reason for that is in that we don't have anything in the material world, we don't have anything with which to hold on to beyond just our familiar surroundings. So, therefore, variety and, like, for instance, you might be in your village or town, and suddenly a horde of marauding Vikings comes along. And then this is very frightening, isn't it? So one devotee was telling me yesterday, they used to build, actually it was Paracharam, he said they were building, they used to build in Ireland, they would build in a monastery, they would build a big tower. And because they were afraid of marauding Vikings coming along, because they did that. They just came along in their long ships, and they were very fierce, and the whole idea was just to basically take over a place. So the monks in the monasteries, they built these big towers, and then as soon as the Vikings came up, they all went up to the top of the tower. And then they could throw unmentionable things on them. And so it's very frightening. And of course, sometimes so anything that's different, they could be a threat. We don't know what their motives are. So this is material life, actually. We don't know what other people's motives are. Do they have my best intent, my best wishes, my well-being in their intentions, or are they coming to exploit? And of course, a lot of the time they are coming to exploit, because the one principle of warfare or sport is attack is the best form of defense. So, you know, we take over other countries or other lands and gain more power. And then we become, we feel more protected. We feel we've actually got. So therefore, in material life, variety or differences are something to be feared. And even now, even in this age of global village, so-called, you know, people pick on differences. People definitely in the mode of ignorance will pick on different, just because you are different, you have a different color skin, you have a different accent, that you're a threat. So, but in the spiritual world, the big difference is that Krishna is in the center. Because Krishna is the center, then all variety is just actually emanating from Krishna. We have trust in Krishna. We feel that Krishna is our best friend, and he's actually the owner of everything. Everything must be actually for our benefit, for the welfare of everyone. So therefore, there's not the fear that material variety induces. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai. So therefore, spiritual variety, or actually variety is the spice of life, but it has to be with Krishna in the center. The variety we're looking for in the material world is always unsatisfied because material nature is inert. Matter is inert. So it never satisfies the soul. So therefore, we're always looking for new varieties of enjoyment. And those new varieties are more and more perverted, the tendency is. And therefore, the tendency in material life is always degradation. So, therefore, Krishna comes to this material world and to demonstrate his spiritual activities so that we don't get diverted to the material varieties of so-called enjoyment. That there is actually an alternative. So most of us, most people are unaware of that. Therefore, they're becoming frustrated. That actually there is no real happiness in this world. So the Lord performs his pastimes for our benefit. And he brings all his varieties so that we can understand that everything is personal. Because ultimately, the lack of variety means impersonalism. And if we're if we have no knowledge of the fact that there is real spiritual variety, then we think that actually everything is impersonal. Even other people, just like some Christians say that animals have no souls. So if they have no souls, they're not persons. They're not individuals. Therefore, they can be exploited. Therefore, they're just there for our dominion, for us to exploit them. So Krishna is showing, he brings all his paraphernalia, all his devotees, everything from the spiritual world so that we can realize that actually everything is personal. The river, the mountains, everything has a personal feature. And therefore, everything should be respected and revered and considered sacred and not to be exploited. So, because if Krishna didn't act out his pastimes and show us actually what spiritual enjoyment really is, that it's actually really personal, then we would have no other concept of spiritual life, of really how to enjoy life. Of course, the real way to enjoy life is to give enjoyment to Krishna. So there's one paragraph in the purport to the first verse of the first chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srila Prabhupada is explaining how actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that the whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. But he explains that sex life is not unreal. Its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. So, because the material sex life is a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact is the absolute truth. And so the point is that the absolute truth cannot be impersonal, because this is a major flaw in the impersonal philosophy. Because if everything is just oneness, Brahman, the effulgence, that means it's impersonal. There's no variety. So therefore, right at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, it's established actually that, and it's referred to this sex life because that's what most people are thinking is the supreme enjoyment. And Prabhupada said, it is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. So if we become more personal, we can then understand Krishna's pastimes and realizing that they are really spiritual pastimes. So the point is that Prabhupada is explaining that the impersonal philosophers have given, he calls it, an indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life, because they've overstressed the impersonality of the ultimate truth. So, but the point that he then goes on to say is that the Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually elevate the unbiased reader to the highest perfectional stage of transcendence. So of course we don't go straight to the 10th canto. We have to understand all this philosophy of creation and the Vaikuntha planets, the Brahmajyoti, and then when we to some degree understand that, then we'll be able to understand the pastimes of Krishna and his supremely pure transcendental pastimes with his eternal consort Srimati Radharani and the gopis, and in that way become purified of our impersonal tendencies and materialistic understanding of how to lead our lives. So I'll stop there and ask if there are any questions or comments.